Chairman Fields, are you on the phone?
I am on the phone.
Okay. We're going to start here in about 5 seconds.
5 seconds, okay.
You could fill it up, General. You could fill it up.
No, I overdose on it.
So, okay. You guys ready? Good morning, everybody. We're going to call the joint education meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, February 10, 2016. Members present include Representative Drummond, Representative Drummond, Senator Gardner, Senator Stevens, Representative Keller, Representative Vasquez, Senator Huggins, and I anticipate more representatives and senators to arrive here shortly. Once again, if you have your cell phones on, please turn them off. So this meeting is an informational meeting as required by AS 1407-168. The State Board of Education and Early Development has provided the committee with an annual report to the legislature. The purpose of today's meeting is to review the report and to be briefed on the strategic priorities of the board. Chairman Fields is joining us online. Shortly he'll introduce himself, and there are Department of Education officials here also to assist Chairman Fields in the presentation of this committee report, or report from the board. So, again, I'd like to thank the members of the committee for being here. Chairman Fields, if you can identify yourself for the record and begin giving the report, that would be great. And just to let you know, I'm sure you know that you've got Commissioner Hanley here and Director of Teacher and Learning Support, Susan McCulley, here as well. So if you can identify yourself for the record and begin the report, that would be great.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, my name is James Fields. I'm the chairman of the Alaska State Board of Education Early Development, and as Senator Dunleavy has mentioned, this is in regards to the report to the legislature and the statute that requires that. I think you have the full report in your possession, and then you have the summary as well as the brochure. So what I'd like to do is just do more of a high level. I've kind of picked some of the things out that I find is important high level. And then if there are things that start getting in the mechanics of the process, we have Marcy Herman, Special Assistant to the Commissioner, and Senator Dunleavy has mentioned Dr. Susan McCauley and the Commissioner there as well, too, that I'll defer to for those types of questions. So, Chairman, do you want me to just go through the whole summary, or can I expect to get stopped occasionally, or just go through it and then have questions at the end, or?
What would you prefer? We can hold questions, or we can ask questions during the presentation. Committee members? Want to just let them present, or do you want to have questions during the presentation?
I think it's easier.
Okay. So what we'll do is, as you're presenting, Chairman, we will, members, if they have questions, ask you to pause for a moment, and we'll take the questions. At this time, I'd also like to put on the record that Representative Christ Tompkins was here at 8:31, and Representative Seaton is also here at roughly the same time. So with that, please begin, Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Then I'll probably just go through the bullets. So I'll go through strategic priorities, and then after each one, I'll pause and make sure there aren't any questions. That'd probably be the easiest, since it is via teleconference. I'd just like to first, it's not on the sheet, but just name the actual State Board of Education Early Development members. Myself, James Fields, is chair. Sue Hull is first vice chair. Barbara Thompson is second vice chair. Kenny Gallahorn, board member. Kathleen Yar, board member. Dr. Keith Hamilton, board member, and John Harmon, board member, and then we have student advisor Alec Burris, and the military advisor, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Nall. So those are the board. That's the State Board of Education. In 2015, the State Board of Education Early Development developed strategic priorities to guide the board in its leadership role and focus the department's actions on student achievement as the highest priority. Informed by the perspectives of superintendents, legislators, and school board members, the State Board established three priorities as the foundation of its plan. Those include empowering local control of educational decisions, modernize the state's educational system, and ensure high-quality educators for Alaska's children. And along with that, you have the brochure that the department has put together to kind of give a little more detail to that. The next area that I've highlighted is the resolutions. We, in December, the State Board approved three resolutions. Those include supporting no change to the minimum student count for school funding, supporting repeal of the minimum expenditure for instruction, and recommending funding of the cooperative arrangement grants as provided in AS 14.14.115. Moving on to significant regulations.
Excuse me, Chairman.
Yes.
One moment. We have a question. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And thank you for being here and for your report here. Can you describe what's meant by, and I know this comes from the legislature, not directly from you, but what is cooperative arrangement grants? How does that differ from other grants?
Based on that statute, I think if I get out of line, Commissioner, maybe jump in, but there's a current reg that there's a current statute that allows if districts go into collaboration of trying to go into cost-saving measures, then there's grant funds available to kind of help with that process, and it's pretty much it's a statute that's there but's never been funded.
So, if I might,
is that correct, Commissioner?
You want to introduce yourself for the record, Commissioner, and then
for the record, my name is Mike Hannon, the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And with your permission, that Chair Fields, that is correct. The statute states that that districts can apply for grants for one-time grants of up to $100,000 as they pursue consolidation of services. It's not really the consolidation of districts, but as they start to work at sharing services, that they can receive grants. And so this, it hasn't been funded, but as the conversations go about finding efficiencies around the state, we were hearing districts that would like to do this, and so the board moved forward with that.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. So I did look at the statute, and it actually just says cooperative arrangements, but it's between districts, and I guess the regulations have more detail about that.
Yeah. Through the chair, there are no additional regulations in regards to that. It's just simply the statute that references it.
I think it's just a statute. I don't know if it's ever been activated. I don't know if it's ever been funded. I've seen no history. This is Senator Dunleavy speaking to this issue. So I know it's in the books. We used to bring it up as a superintendent every now and then. But I think correct me if I'm wrong, Chairman Fields and Commissioner, I think it's coming, it's rising to the forefront now because of a potential less funding, maybe cooperating on doing shared purchasing, shared accounting, that sort of thing. So,
thank you.
Representative Christ Tompkins?
Not so much a question, but a comment, but I know two districts school districts in my district, Southeast Island and Heidelberg, have merged superintendent offices and shared administrative services motivated by this particular section of statute.
Right, but I think what's being asked, correct me if I'm wrong, in this resolution, I think what's being asked is that the legislature look at actually funding this in the event that more districts want to merge services and they may not have the expertise or the manpower to go through that process, that this would help with that.
Yeah, that's correct. And like you had mentioned when you were a superintendent, just another incentive to actually have them look at those collaborations and cooperations with each other. Sometimes, you know, dollars get districts thinking different ways, and so it's just another possible way to have districts start thinking that way.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions on this issue? If you can continue.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Moving into significant regulations, the strategic priority empowering local control, the State Board adopted regulations to permit an alternate route for obtaining an administrator certificate with a superintendent endorsement. The Board's intent was to encourage a larger pool of applicants for superintendent positions in light of the many annual vacancies among superintendents. Many rural districts supported this certificate. The new certificate contains many requirements to ensure quality is in place. The State Board raised educators' fees for a certification in order to fully cover the annual cost, approximately $300,000, of operating the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. And in keeping with the strategic priority empowering local control, the State Board repealed the requirement for school districts to administer early literacy assessments to students in kindergarten through third grade. The state no longer funds such assessments, and so without the repeal, the assessment requirement would be an unfunded mandate and districts favored that repeal. Last one, in keeping with the strategic priority empowering local control, the state board adopted regulation to allow advanced nurse practitioners to diagnose fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and other health impairments in determining a student's eligibility for special education. Previously, only physicians were allowed to make that determination, which placed a burden on districts. The regulation was requested by health practitioners and vetted by the state's chief medical officer, and based on just the state's size and some of the rural districts has really helped out in being able to diagnose those in villages and areas that were hard to reach. Any questions on that section?
Yes, Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I have questions in two areas. One is the raising fees for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. I assume this is true, but I would like your confirmation that the commission has explored other ways of reducing their costs. Do they meet in person, for example, for all their meetings? Do they meet electronically explored ways to avoid raising costs to educators by reducing the cost of running the commission?
And again, if members of the department wish to come forward to assist Chairman Fields in the answering that question, that'd be great.
Yeah, if you could, please. That gets into the mechanic. Thanks for the question, though.
Through the Chair, again, for the record, my name is Mike Hanley, the Commissioner for the Department of Education. There's actually statutory language that speaks to the PTPC being self-sufficient and supported by fees. And it is supported by, I liken it to the Bar Association for lawyers. So we only have two staff members there at about cost of about $300,000 to operate that. So the way that it is supported is through teacher fees. So they don't charge for their services. They are a part of education.
Senator.
Thank you. So do the members come from different parts of the state and all travel to meet in person when they meet? How often do they meet? Or can they have telephonic meetings to save cost? That's really my question.
Through the Chair, Senator Drummond, or Senator Gardner, I'm sorry. They meet three times a year,
uh-huh.
And traditionally they have met face-to-face in light of travel restrictions. They will be looking at doing that differently. They're non-paid members, but per diem is paid as needed, as is the travel.
Thank you. So I guess, I sit on the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, and we're making every effort to avoid having travel costs and such for our meetings and to still get our work done. And there's a downside to that. You know, there's no substitute for going to communities and being there in person to hear what they have to say, but that's what we're doing. And I guess if the PTPC is moving to face-to-face meetings at least part of the time and avoiding travel costs as well as avoiding travel costs, does it not make sense to hold off on raising fees for teachers until we know what the costs are, savings are?
To the Chair, Senator Gardner, there's legislative intent language that we would actually move towards getting the PTPC to be self-sustained, and we followed through with that. Those fees are already in place. We could see some cost savings, but most of the costs come from the small office space, the PTPC director, and the secretary, and there are just a few travel costs in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think we would almost need to look at, if we see reduced costs, which we'll anticipate being some, but it's hard to say. I don't know where the travel comes from right now. Okay. I couldn't quantify it. But if we were able to save $20,000 or $30,000 over the course of a year, we could reevaluate if those fees are too high.
Okay.
But right now it's covering the cost. And that
was
the intent.
Thank you.
Senator?
Thank you. I have another question about repealing the requirement for early literacy assessments for students in kindergarten through third grade, and there's a big nationwide push, and I trust that we're doing some of that too, to have readers by third grade reading for information, not reading to learn how to read, and if we don't have the literacy assessments, how do we know how we're doing on that until kids reach third grade and then all of a sudden we say, oh my goodness, they're not there?
Through the chair, Senator. Very brief history of it is that under Governor Parnell, there was the same conversation around making sure that our kids were able to read in third grade, and we know the importance of that. The first step of that is having a way to diagnose and understand where those students are. And so a literacy screener was something that many of our districts were already doing. $300,000 was put in by Governor Parnell and then approved by the legislature to allow that to happen across the state. In our budget times, when that funding was removed, I think Chair Field spoke very clearly about it. It became an unfunded mandate for districts to do, and the board felt, and Chair Fields, correct me if I'm wrong, but the board felt that it was important. If it was unfunded now, that the requirement should also go away. Several districts still use these tools on their own, but it's not a statewide mandate anymore.
And if I could comment through the chair, Senator Gardner, the commissioner's right. This was another topic of discussion about do we leave it in there because we obviously see it as important. Do we not? Initially, when we actually put it into play under Governor Parnell, it was even talked about do we make it a mandate? Do we make it something that isn't required? Because, again, it just becomes another mandate on districts. And really the intent and the hope was that districts would see the importance of the early literacy screening in the way of all the districts. And so even if it went away, they would see the importance and continue on with the project. And like the commissioner said, the majority of districts are still continuing, from what I understand, to use those. And so hopefully the districts that were not and started because of this money continue on because it is important.
Thank you. Commissioner, do you mind staying there? I think there's going to be. Okay. Representative Seaton and then Senator Gardner.
I had a separate question.
Okay. Can we go follow-up? Follow-up?
Thank you, Senator Gardner. Thank you. So do we have data about the effectiveness of the effort made to do early and then regular assessments on students from kindergarten to third grade?
Through the chair, the data was designed to inform instruction. It was not designed for accountability at the state level. It was just to inform those teachers. So we do have those. It was required that the data was submitted. So we do have that data, but we don't see outcome. They're diagnostic tools, not designed to – they're informative tools at the beginning of a process, not at the end of a process. So they were only in place for a year or 2 years. We would anticipate the teachers responded and adjusted instruction to meet the needs of children. But we don't have end of the longitudinal data to say, did a screener at the beginning cause something different in the end?
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on page 2 of the actual report and going on to page 3 of the report, there is an entire section under regulations and other board actions on the Alaska Performance Scholarship and extending the time beyond the 6 years that students could use that if they were experiencing delays that were outside their control. I don't see that addressed anywhere in the bullet points. Is that something that the president or whoever could address?
Chairman Fields, that question is directed at yourself, but you have the commissioner here as a lifeline as well.
Well, I'll take that lifeline. I just put down points that I thought were important and figured, yeah, if you had other questions on the full legislative report, go ahead and ask those.
Commissioner,
if you could speak to that.
Yes, through the chair. Representative Seaton, as the APS was fully implemented, we found particular situations that came up that needed to be adjusted just for the sake of kids. Our goal was not to try to keep kids out, but to find legitimate ways to access the performance scholarship when it was feasible. So the nursing program at UAA was kind of the impetus, but it's a good example of why this was put in place. Students sometimes are on a 2 or 3 year waiting list to get into the nursing program. And so through no fault of their own, due to restrictions into getting into a program, they qualified, they were ready, they had applied, and they couldn't get in. And we didn't want the performance scholarship to expire while they were waiting to get in. There are other requirements in here that weren't referenced that simply say that the university must state the concerns and the issues were outside of a student's control and what they were, the programmatic issues. But that's what drove that, just to allow students who were ready and able and should be getting it to continue to get it without having it expire.
And follow up?
Yes.
And I just want to make sure that to accomplish that, can you do that fully by regulation, or do we need to have some statutory change as well?
Through the chair, we felt that it was surely within the statutory language to allow us to make those accommodations. It still met the goal of the performance scholarship and the intent of the scholarship. It was just trying to address these types of unique situations. So I don't believe any statutory. We didn't believe, and our legal advice was that no statutes were needed to be changed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just for the record, Representative Reinbold is in audience, and next question goes to Representative Vasquez.
Yes, I agree with Senator Gardner. The latest research indicates that if children are not able to read by grade 4, they will become at risk. So going back to your testimony, Commissioner Hanley, you said that testing students from kindergarten through third grade was a diagnostic tool in place for 1 to 2 years. Which years were you referring to?
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, I'm trying to think of when the money was appropriated, the $300,000 from the legislature, and it was either 2014 or 2013. I believe it was a part of the HB 278 package, okay. So that would have been 2014, so it would have been in place just a year.
Starting July 1st.
Okay.
Continue.
So it was only $300,000 allocated for this testing, or was there another year?
It was, through the chair, it was an annual cost of $300,000. What we did was we looked at the tools that would qualify for these as screeners, some that districts were already using and others that would do the same thing. What were those costs? And that's where the $300,000 came from. Okay.
How many districts have continued with this diagnostic tool?
Through the chair, we haven't kept track with how many were doing it, are doing it now. We know that well over half were doing it previously as kind of a best practices. The goal at the time was to provide that resource for all teachers. But we don't keep track now of how many are still doing it.
Commissioner Hanley, in light of the importance of this issue, could you get back to us as far as and the state board, how they would plan to keep track of this and how to encourage districts to do this? In light of spending for fiscal year 2016, including federal funds and all state funds, the legislature spent almost $2 billion. It's hard to believe that this system cannot come up with $300,000 to ensure that our kids or our children, our students, don't become at risk. It's just very hard for me to believe that.
So, just a comment. I believe this was part of the budget reductions. This all, it wasn't taken out because of issues other than that. And I know that the commissioner, have had discussions that there's everyone is looking at ESSA as to see if there's any potential there to shift some of these things, especially like early or pre-K or early elementary ed. So I know that they're looking at that as well. But your words are well taken. Chairman Fields, can we continue?
Yes, thank you. And I would comment on the early literacy screening. That was another large topic, and we were going forward with that. And it's talked about, do we have data? That was a big discussion about the goal was not to put another mandate on districts to have to have another report on data. It was mainly just to make sure that they're following through and giving that early literacy screening. So the intent was not to basically have the data, but just to make sure that the tool is available and that they're using the tool for early literacy screening. So if that if that has changed or if we move forward, then that would be something we could look at. But again, we're trying to stay away from extra unfunded mandates in the way of requiring data and reporting by the district. So that's just a comment, a lot of the back history on those conversations.
Please continue.
I'm gonna skip the board office and new members. I kind of went over that from the get-go about who is there. You can just read that yourself. Charters, the State Board approved request for all 8 charters, new
Excuse
or...
Excuse me, Chairman Fields?
Yeah.
We have a question from Senator Stevens.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for your comments. And since this is an opportunity to talk about the board and its officers and new members, I just want to raise a question that I need some clarification on the role of the Board of Education versus the role of the governor. Who is in charge of education in Alaska? Is it the board? Is it the governor? Is it both? What will be your involvement in the selection of the next commissioner? Will that decision be yours as a board, or will it be the governor's? How's that going to work?
In the past, obviously, that sometimes the governor has taken that role and kind of given advice to the board on who he's looking at. I've talked to Governor Walker. He assures me that as statute shows, we're appointed by the governor, and our job as the State Board of Education is to appoint the commissioner and have that confirmed by the governor. That appointment confirmed. So it will be in the State Board of Education's hands. How that process plays out, you know, if we got to meet at the whole board to see how they want to go forward with that process of picking a new commissioner. But based on statute, that is how the commissioner is picked.
Any additional questions?
I understand the statute. Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay. Charters. The State Board approved requests for all 8 charters, new or renewed, that it received. All such requests had been approved first by the applicant local school board. Alaska Measures of Progress. The written report to the legislature reflects events in 2015. Since then, the department has decided to not use the Alaska Measures of Progress assessment after the school year. Federal law requires us to give an assessment this spring, so we'll use it this spring as of now. And the department will prepare an RFP for a new test vendor for the following year. Superintendents and other stakeholders will be consulted in the RFP process. Any questions on that point?
Yep. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Fields, the policy or the decision for school districts to administer the AMP this year has been questioned by some. I would be one that would say, I'm not sure what we do with the results of that other than put it in a file cabinet someplace or throw it away. But help me out if that's a callous observation.
I'll make a comment, then I'll probably put it on to the commissioner as well. I understand the anxiety. I can see both sides. I know that the commissioner has approached the U.S. Department of Education and the possibility of seeing if we can get a waiver around that or not. I don't know where that sits, but I know he's approached them. So I will leave it there if the commissioner has more to say on that.
Commissioner?
Chair, Senator Huggins. I did speak to, along with Dr. McCauley, I did speak to Secretary John King, Acting Secretary John King with the U.S. Department of Education yesterday. And there are no opportunities to not give an assessment this year. The one thing I would point out, and we're actually working with some messaging for our school districts, is that one of the largest concerns around the AMP was that at the school level and the district level, they felt that the information, the data wasn't actionable. There wasn't enough detail to make actions and changes at the school level. We understood that, along with some technical issues that we had, chose to go that different direction. The data that is there, though, we believe is valid and reliable, higher level than we want, and knowing that we are required to do this, I've worked with a group of about 15 superintendents, say, what can we do to fix this and make this as good as possible? The reports will be modified. We're going to move from 4 levels to 8 levels. We're going to remove some language that was confusing and some graphics that were confusing. We're going to be more timely in the return of the data, and the school districts will actually get some of the raw data so they can interpret that as to how to best move forward. But ultimately, if I were a parent, the other thing actually that I think is very significant is trying to put a silver lining on a dark cloud and say, you know, is this totally useless? The other thing that superintendents asked for, and we confirmed with our vendor, is that it's going to be a two-year report. So because we believe that the data that is provided is accurate and valid, parents, students, schools will be able to see how their students have improved from one year to the next. They will be able to see that comparison. We think that that's important. So we have at least 2 years of comparability. So again, it's not what we wanted. That's why we're going a different direction. But I do believe there's some validity, and there could be some value to the greatest extent that we can get by doing this one more time.
Yeah, just one thought, and I don't want to beat a dead horse, but what if we came to the different conclusion? We say, thank you very much, that you think it's important, we don't. Well, what are they going to do, send us a letter that's printed in red ink, or what are the consequences?
To the chair, Senator Huggins, we know that other states have been, not necessarily in regards to assessments, but other components of federal law, they risk sanctions and the money tied to the federal law. For us, we're looking anywhere between $63 million that are directly tied to title monies up to about $300 million, which is about the total amount of money that we receive from the federal government. So we do put those at risk if we intentionally choose not to to follow that. It is probably also important to note that it's also in state statute that we do an annual
Yeah, just if I could, Mr. Chairman, just one final comment. It appears that we have now under ESSA a new philosophy, a new era, and that what we're doing doesn't correspond with the new era, for lack of a better term. I'll leave it there.
Any additional questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I'm not sure quite how to phrase this as a question, but we know there is value in doing appropriate assessments. We've talked about that to inform instruction. It's an accountability measure for our teachers, for our schools, for ourselves as a legislature, that we know if we're moving in the right direction, if our kids are being prepared for what they need to learn. That's what an assessment's supposed to do. And it has to be aligned to their what they're being taught. So it's troubling that we're starting over. Anybody who's in the software business, the design business, knows there's going to be a lot. There always are bugs in the system, and that's what we've experienced. So I don't know if it's the right thing to do to switch horses here, or if we've invested and we should improve what we've got. I mean, every state is doing something here, and it seems sort of silly for people to kind of go their own way in every measure when it's a very, very costly effort. So I'm just not convinced that this is the right thing to do, or if these were the right people, or where things went wrong. But it's a lot of money that we don't know the next time around if we're going to be any happier with it. Do we start over again? And yet we do understand that the assessment process is accountability and a value for our kids ultimately, which is what we're trying to get to. I'm just not sure that I understand enough about how things will be different this time.
I'm just trying to clarify, is it a question or just a thought? Or?
Well, let's see if he could. It's a thought. It's a concern I'm expressing.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, it was one of the harder decisions that I've made, but because your points are valid. To switch after 1 year is difficult, and yet to move forward. And I share with superintendents, this is the rock and the hard place type of a question and a decision that has to be made. Moving forward with something that has lost so much confidence across the state, really difficult to regain that. But also doing another transition is equally difficult. The one thing that coincidentally came along at the same time is ESSA. And so we can take this opportunity to say, where once we were only allowed a summative assessment at the end of every year, we now have options. We now have options for local school districts to choose a different high school exam that's nationally recognized. We also had the opportunity to move to, and I know you heard this from previous testimony from the superintendents and from Dr. Parity, we can also move to a series of interim assessments that can be combined into a summative score, a different type of assessment that can be given throughout the year. So in one sense, it's timely in that we've got the passage of that and we can start to look at new opportunities, but it does require, you know, a new transition. The only thing I would like to just reference is that we're still under a 5-year, $25 million contract, renewable annually. We've paid, by the end of this second year, we will have paid about $9 million. We will have paid for 2 years' worth of assessments, which we will have given. We don't lose $25 million. We didn't waste $9 million. We were able to give an assessment that had glitches, but we give an assessment for 2 years. And so I don't want there to be a perception that we suddenly wasted a ton of money. Yes, it's been a frustrating process, but we got 2 years of assessments out of it, and we'll move in a different direction. But your points are well made.
Follow up?
Yes, this raises another question. I didn't realize that high schools can choose a different exam that's nationally recognized under the new law. And so if we want to say, how is Mount Edgecombe doing compared to East High in my district? What are the outcomes for kids? If they're doing different assessments, we don't know.
Through the chair, Senator, we don't have, and I spoke to John King about this yesterday, Secretary King, and until the federal regulations come out, we're not exactly sure just what that's going to look like. But the ones that are always thrown out when you think of a high school nationally recognized assessment, most people automatically go to SAT and ACT. They do have comparability scores between them, so there could be some comparability there. I don't know if there will be other assessments that will come up, but it sure seems that those two eventually will meet the requirements, but we'll have to wait to see what the federal regulations say.
Thank you.
I think I'm going to go to Representative Seaton and then Representative Vasquez. Before I do that, Commissioner, do you, and I don't know the answer to this, but do you know how long the reauthorization is for on ESSA? Do they have a time period attached to
it? Yes. Chair Dunleavy, it's 4 years.
4 years.
But we realize under No Child Left Behind, it took them 8 additional years to even reauthorize
right,
it.
Right.
If it's not reauthorized, it just stays in place. It doesn't go away. It doesn't sunset. It just stays in place. But, yes, 4 years.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Seaton.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The legislature has been looking at not only absolute numbers but growth, and we've been, you know, this whole idea of being able to measure growth so that you can find out how education is progressing in individual schools and all. If we just stop after the second year, we'll have the growth model between those 2 years. How long does it take us, or are there alternatives that are already given that give us growth comparisons across schools and, you know, within instructional units in the state?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, you're right. We didn't try to recalibrate or connect the AMP assessment to the SBAs. They were too different. And so you're right, we'll have 2 years. We'll be able to show growth and show how our schools are doing and moving in what direction they're moving. I am anticipating that a new assessment will also cause a lack of connection between AMP and a new one, and will take one more year before we can start to show growth. I couldn't say that for sure. I'm not sure what assessment that will be, but I would anticipate that then we'll have to recalibrate one more time. And so we'll have a gap this coming year, or in 17, or we won't be able to connect again. So does that answer your question?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
And I just want to express that I'm concerned. The legislature has been expressing, the education committees have been expressing for a long time that what we want to do is make sure that we measure growth in students and not just, you know, what was a static level. And it concerns me that we're looking at 4 years and saying, oh, well, we've got growth here, but now we can't follow up and see whether that works, and now we'll start another, and we have to have an initial year, and then maybe after a second year or a second assessment, then we'll be able to look at growth. And it's, you know, it's been one of the big pushes in the legislature, in the education committees and all, is to change from just a base assessment to looking at a growth model so we can see how we are doing. So it concerns me that we are
that if the school board doesn't have some other form of looking at growth, a comparative, that we're stepping backwards quite a ways. So I just wanted to put that out. Thank you.
Thank you. I misrepresented.
Senator Dunleavy, Chair Fields here.
Go ahead, Chairman.
I was just going to mention that Representative Pete, I'm not going to say it's probable, but it's possible. I mean, data is data, so it's possible that that could be part of the RFP to see if that's possible to, you know, I think it may be a long shot, but data is data. There may be a way to be able to cross that and do some assessment between one to the other in the RFP. So I'm sure someone's making a note of that to put that down and see if that's a possibility. But, I mean, data is data, so if we can get to the data, it's a possibility. I'm not going to say it's probable, but it's possible. Good point, though.
Thank you. Representative Keller and then Representative Vasquez.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to respectfully request that we continue on and get the big picture of the report. There's value in looking at different models and looking back at our decision on AMP and that kind of thing. But the real answer here is where we're going. And frankly, in my view, the legislature's we're in a spot of kind of trying to figure out where we fit in this and what kind of input we have. And I think that when we get a chance, a lot of times we get into the policy issues, and that's great, but I just respectfully request that we continue with the report. And not to limit anybody's input, because everybody is free to do that, but just to the committee, I would, if we could get to the report, I'd appreciate it.
We're going to go to Representative Vasquez. We are on page 3 of the report, and there's approximately 15 pages to it, and we've got roughly 45 minutes left. Representative Vasquez?
Well, I have a budgetary question concerning the Alaska Measures of Progress. It's a 5-year contract for $25 million. Are we breaking the contract? How much in damages will we be owing if we're breaking that contract? And I'd like to see a copy. Can you submit a copy of that contract?
Through the Chair, Representative Vasquez, yes, we can get you a copy of the contract. It's a 5-year contract, renewable annually.
Okay.
And so that our annual renewal time is right around June 30th. We can separate at that time.
Without any damages or any fees?
Yeah. Okay. Renewable by both parties annually.
I like to see a nationally recognized assessment tool being used, because otherwise it's very difficult to compare oranges with apples. And given that we want some accountability, it would be nice to see something like that.
Thank you.
So, Chairman Fields, if you can continue with the report.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to the Every Student Succeeds Act, the new federal education law, the Every Student Succeeds Act returns to the state some of the control over their schools that was lost in No Child Left Behind. The department and the state board intends to work with stakeholders to build a school accountability system that meets the needs of parents, students, educators, and the public. The state board will consider removing from state regulations, the former federal requirement that school districts incorporate data about student achievement and educator evaluation. Using such data sounds like a good idea, and it is a good idea, but implementing its use in a fair and valid way is an enormous and time-consuming task for districts. The districts would have to generate 5% data about student achievement for all subjects, including the many subjects that don't use standardized tests. Beyond that, the Every Student Succeeds Act allows the states more flexibility in the type of assessment, more freedom in creating a school accountability system, and more local control over corrective measures for low-performing schools. The department will be working with stakeholders on the state plan to operate under the new law. The plan is due at the end of October 2016. The department will convene an advisory committee to develop options for the state plan. The committee will include members from urban and rural districts and at least one member each from education, parent, business, nonprofit, and Alaska Native organizations. The public will be encouraged to comment on the options on the draft plan and on the revised draft plan. Moving on to the Alaska Statewide Mentor Project, I just mentioned this because it fits into our strategic priority of ensuring the high-quality educators. And the Alaska State Mentor Project, the partnership of the department and the University of Alaska, has been serving school districts since 2004-2005 school year. One of its main goals is to improve teacher retention, particularly in rural districts, so that students can benefit from experienced teachers. Since the project began, mentors have served in 52 of Alaska's 54 districts and over 80% of Alaska's approximately 500 public schools. For 2015-16, 30 mentors are serving 328 early career teachers in 188 schools within 28 school districts. The state funds 12 mentors, 9 full-time, 3 part-time, and 23 rural districts. The remaining mentors are funded through external sources. A federal investing in innovation grant funds, a study that evaluates the effectiveness of ASMP, is in 5 urban districts. It supports 14 mentors, 10 urban and 4 rural. The remaining 4 rural mentors are funded through 2 other federal grants. The state libraries, you guys are probably aware of the building going up there, and it's scheduled to open in April of 2016. And I just put a few bullet points down there about what the Libraries, Archives, and Museums Division does in regards to K-12 education. They have the Live Homework Help Program, Alaska's Digital Pipeline, where hundreds of textbooks, online magazines, newspapers are there, and then also the Alaska Native Language Materials that are scanned and available online. Graduation dropout rate. In 2015, the preliminary 5-year graduation rate was 78.3%. This refers to a cohort of students who are 9th graders 5 school years previously. Many graduated in 4 years, but others needed all or part of a 5th year. The 5-year rate reflects more accurately than the 4-year rate the percentage of 9th graders that do get a diploma. Alaska's 4-year rate in 2015 was 75.6, up from 71.2 in 2014. With the repeal of the Alaska High School Graduation Qualifying Exam, more students are receiving a diploma. Preliminary information for the 2014-2015 school year shows a grade 7 through 12 dropout rate of 3.68% compared to 4% in 13-14. The dropout rate generally has declined from 6% in 04-05. The National Assessment of Education Progress, every 2 years, the U.S. Department of Education, through the National Assessment of Education Progress, tests large samples of 4th graders and 8th graders in each state in reading and math. The most recent results were released in 2015. State and nationwide results are presented as average scores on a scale of 0 to 500. The scale scores fall into 4 categories of achievement: advanced, proficient, basic, and below basic. NAEP also reports the percentage of students who fall within those categories of achievement. NAEP's definition of proficiency is rigorous. In NAEP, basic refers to partial mastery of subjects. Proficient refers to competency in challenging material, including knowledge, application, and analytical skills. Advanced is superior performance. In no state did more than 54% of students score proficient on any of the NAEP tests. Alaska's performance on the NAEP is poor. It is similar to the national average, because that also is poor. Some states perform notably better than Alaska and the national average. The department has cited Alaska's performance on NAEP as one indication of the need to implement higher standards in English, language arts, and math. Alaska is about at the national average in 4th grade and 8th grade math. Alaska is notably below the national average in 4th grade reading, but only a little below in 8th grade reading. That concludes my written report, but I'd like to take a minute, if I could, and just show appreciation to Commissioner Hanley and his 5 years of service as commissioner. Thank you for your commitment, Commissioner, and dedication to the students and state of Alaska. It has been apparent to me your passion for all kids, whether rural or urban, is strong and unwavering. You have done a great work in bringing urban and rural districts together, and I know that legacy will continue into the future. Thank you for the grace and respect you have shown to me over the years, and thank you for almost always having a contagious smile on your face. I consider you more than the commissioner. I consider you a friend. I wish you and your family the best wherever the future takes you, and thank you again for your dedication and commitment to the state.
Thank you, Sheffield.
Thank you, Chairman Fields. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Keller and then Senator Gardner.
I didn't mean to be quite so effective of a wet blanket. We got done 10 minutes. A question did come to me on the fifth year students. Do we have some kind of idea of the budgetary impact of the students that take the additional year or part of year? We changed from a four-year graduation plan to a five-year. Is there a significant number of students that are taking 5 years to finish, and can you make a general statement about the budget?
Through the Chair, Representative Keller. Chair Fields, are you comfortable with me taking this one?
Yes, please. Okay. There
are very few students that actually need 5 years. The goal has not changed from a four-year to five-year. One of the reasons we like to report it is I honestly believe that every student that has enough of a connection to come back to school, even after most of their peers have gone, and they feel enough value in that to come back and get their diploma is a success story. For whatever reason, they weren't able to do it in 4 years, and so I think it's nice to recognize that five-year. Our goal hasn't changed. The goal is still 4 years, and students who don't have issues, that haven't been beat up by life and have everything in order, they get through that in 4 years. So I guess technically the few students that do come back, they would qualify as students and be funded as students. But I don't believe the fiscal impact is marginal, nominal. But again, that's why we report that fifth year, just because I do think it's worth noting.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if Mr. Fields could enlighten us a little on the issue of Mount Edgecombe. It's been sort of a tempest in a teapot. We've had lots of folks come by thinking the school was closing and changing, and I just wanted to know what the board's involvement in that was, if anything.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the board's involvement at this point hasn't been any. Individually speaking, I've received phone calls from Dr. Herb Schroeder, and pretty much told him, if the legislature wants to move this way, that's up to the legislature, and when and if they want our input, I'm sure we could give it, but right now it's in the legislature's hands, so just let me know what I'm over and what I'm not, and we'll go from there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we need your input. We need your input on this. It's an important issue, a successful program, and two successful programs, and we just need to know, was this a shock to the department as it was to us to hear this sort of a done deal?
Through the Chair, Senator Stevens, I received about a 15-minute briefing from Herb on the way here in my office. So it was. He shares with me that there was some intentionality behind that. I will tell you that Herb is on the agenda for the March board meeting to present this to the board. The board was not in the loop either. I have found that to be particularly concerning when the board has a vision, and we've had a vision of local control, that and local input being good input. And my conversations with Jim Johnson at the university, that they have not been in the loop, neither has the department or the state board or the Mount Edgecombe students. So that's a concern. I hope that we can still work it. You probably have more details about the actual plan than I do.
Follow-up?
No, thank you.
Okay. Additional questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. And once again, not to beat a dead horse, but the business of whose responsibility it is and, who should take what action next. I'll just say that, and the commissioner and I have talked about this, and clearly, I mean, there are divisions and the university has responsibility. We have a bit. But it doesn't appear to be a synergistic effect. And oh, by the way, the rumor mill took over. And I'm one of those that believes that you cannot allow the rumor mill to take over, that an omnipotent voice that has responsibility over all of this has to speak out. And who that is, I mean, the people ask it can determine that. But having, much like what Senator Stevens said, having people from Mount Edgecombe coming here, because if you read the newspaper, if you worked at Mount Edgecombe, you could come to the conclusion you might not have a job tomorrow or next year. And all the, and if you're a parent, you say, I wonder where my child is going to go to school next year. That's just flat wrong. But that's all about rumors, because I don't think anybody sitting on an education committee thinks that ANSEP is going to supplant Mount Edgecombe. I don't know anybody that supports that, but unfortunately, rumors after hearing it about three times, sometimes two, becomes fact. And for any role I might have played in that, and maybe I should be the omnipotent voice, but I'll tell all Alaskans that listen to this, if you work at Mount Edgecombe, I wouldn't worry about Mount Edgecombe closing. I wouldn't worry about ANSEP supplanting. More to follow. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I have a little comment. It kind of fits right exactly into that. And I'm going to start by saying that I'm looking forward to the 2016 State Board report. I'm just sitting here thinking about the report and everything that's gone on this past year, and the differences that we're going to see in the report next year. That we, you know, they're just, it's all on the table. We can see it. We've got ESSA, re-up. We've got the AMP question. We got all this out there. And the reason I'm putting it out there, and I think the State Board's got it right. Priority number one that they are showing us here, it just aligns perfectly with ESSA, and that is that there's some level of return of control to the local district. You know, and seeking that out, we've got a challenge ahead of us. And the question that you raised, Senator Huggins, about the omnipotent voice on the education, I just want to point out that I believe that the State Board has a huge responsibility. I want to point out that they are a volunteer board, and they get together just several times a year, and we are figuring out just exactly how the legislature fits in there, other than our big stone sledgehammer of writing a checkbook, And so all these things, I'm actually a little excited about this next year, because I think that it's unsettling enough for all of us, and I think this Mount Edgecombe misunderstanding and rumor mill and everything is a demonstration of the fact that we need some leadership, and I think that Chairman Fields is taking that role well, and I appreciate it. I just wanted to say too that it's budget times, and we're talking a relatively small board, and the questions of travel and everything. I mean, just for me, but I would anticipate that the State Board will have a little bit of an uptick on the travel and working these things out over the next year, because we need you to provide the leadership, and speaking for myself and I think the committees, we anticipate in the education committees in both houses are working closely and being involved and understanding and doing a positive part, because the State Board is pretty far removed from the voters, and the state legislators are not. We're in the front lines there. When our constituents have a concern, they come to us. And if we're not in the process and understanding, that's why reports like this are so valuable. So I didn't mean to talk quite that long, Mr. Chair, but I got going. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree that we're on a kind of a new frontier, but I want us to not forget where we came from. And we came from a point a few years ago in the legislature coming here saying our schools are failing, we have schools that we're going to have to take over as the legislature because the local control isn't working. We've got statewide mentoring projects to improve teachers and administrators' capabilities. Without those, I mean, we do face the possibility of saying, well, for budgetary reasons, the state isn't going to do it, everything's local, and we want to make sure that we have accountability, because we don't want to go back to the situation where we were having failing schools. And I think that we've had improvement, and so I hope that as we go forward in our budgetary process, we don't take our hands so far off accountability that we let the reins go and devolve back to where we were. So I think that that's something that we always just have to keep in mind, that going back to total hands off may have consequences as well. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that.
Thank you. Representative Kelly?
Yeah, I can't help a comment. That's good. That's really good. Representative Seaton, I haven't been around here. There's been a lot of transition on this. I have one question for Chairman Fields. I tried several times to download the bylaws from the state board. And the reason I'm putting it on the record is just, I think it's a worthwhile exercise for people on both committees, but it wouldn't download. So I just want to ask you if you'd confirm that the bylaws for the state board, not right now, but after the meeting, are up and so we can access them. Thanks.
Chair Fields?
Chairman Kelly, yeah, I'll look for that and make sure the department does. Thank you.
I'll get that covered for you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. With that, we're at the end of the report. I'd like to thank Chairman Fields for the report. Commissioner, I appreciate you coming forward and testifying. I want to thank you for your years of service. You and I go back many years working together. We haven't always agreed. Sometimes we've laughed about it. Sometimes we've butted heads. But I do appreciate very much your service, not just for the state, but as well Anchorage. You've had a long tenure in education, and I hope you continue there. So anyway, with that, we're going to adjourn, and thank you very much.